Are you in a mood?
We've started, you know?
Oh, have we?
So that was your first impression of Mia. Very good.
I think you should describe where we are.
Yeah, we are in a dungeon.
Dun-dun-dun.
In a dungeon in an old monastery in the north of France, where we met last week.
It sounds like the beginning of a love story.
But it's not.
Not.
Although a new friendship can be a form of love.
Yes, for sure.
But to disappoint the real romantics.
Yeah, this is not what this is.
This is not what this is. Due to Corona.
that's only reason.
That's the reason. Otherwise, many children. Good, it's a good start. We are at PAF.
Yeah.
Performing Arts Forum in France, where we come for the same reason, a little bit.
Yeah, to think and to make work. Can you hear me on that?
Yeah, it's...
I should be closer. Like this.
Mia, I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
Georges. Gorgeous Georges.
Oh, wow. Is
easy
that
to remember.
Was that your nickname in high school?
I mean, not really, but my parents.
Who have the same last name.
Okay. Exactly.
So,
well, just my dad.
Okay. Cool. Let's have we've started. Normally I do like an introduction, but it's not necessary.
Okay.
I'm here with Mia Georges.
Woohoo. No, sorry, didn't mean to that.
And my first question is like super expected. Mia, can you please introduce yourself to the audience, to the listeners, and what are you doing in life? What are your pronouns? That's maybe also good, so I should keep attention on that.
Yeah, so my name is Mia Georges. My pronouns are they, them. And I am a budding filmmaker, shall we say. I've just made my first short film.
A budding?
A budding.
What's budding?
Like a starting, like a...
Okay.
Or a baby filmmaker, we can also say. And I just made my first short film, Ishtar, which... was a commission from the BBC and an arts gallery in London called the ICA, along with produced by NTS Radio. And then that film is now in the world and doing festivals. And now I'm working on a new project about queer nightlife in London.
Okay, we will talk about that.
Okay.
Later on.
Whew.
Yeah, so that's the introduction. I'll keep in mind that your pronouns are they, them. Have you been using them for a long time?
For how long? Maybe like a year?
Okay.
Now? Something like that.
And how is the world reacting?
Well, all my friends. I mean, yeah. And my family. And I mean, I'm not so well... Yeah, it would be nice if everyone didn't misgender people, but the world isn't like that at this stage.
Yeah.
So I go out into the world knowing that.
Yeah. Shall we talk about Ishtar more?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because I read on the queer media sites, queer media,
maybe
queer
on
house.
The Queer House, which is the agency I'm represented by.
Oh, okay. And they had everything in one sentence.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot in one sentence, but I read it. Ishtar hosts a feast in an English country garden for five trans, non-binary, and gender non-confirming siblings of color. It says a lot in one sentence.
Yeah.
And I had the privilege to see the movie, a few days ago when we had a queer movie night. Indeed. In the monastery, the reason why we'll maybe never go to heaven. But that's okay.
Yeah.
I was pleased that you also told me some stuff about it, because it comes from a really you documented it a lot for yourself, right? The whole Ishtar, we see the result, the more poetic artistic result of
yeah.
it. But it's behind the scenes, the past months, years, you mm-hmm. documented so much about it, I think.
Yeah, or read a text, which is a really old, one of the oldest texts in the world, but in translation, obviously. And called Inanna, the Queen of Descent. And Inanna is Ishtar and Inanna. One is the Sumerian name and one is the Akkadian name. So different regions, but and time periods. But so I read that text and got a lot from that, and then just researched objects that we have, or I suppose that's where also stories we have from Ishtar, we should say, is 3000 is it the deity is from 3500 BC, so we're talking 5000 years ago. So
and Ishtar is a god,
a deity, god, a god, a goddess,
okay, which has gender fluid elements.
Yeah, so some people talk about them as gender fluid. Other, on the internet as well, they're often pronounced as she, her, but then also some people talk about them as being gender fluid, which is, I suppose, what caught my imagination. And also, I mean, there's so much it's such a long time ago. There's so much history that's lost or we don't know literally. So I kind of took bits that sparked my imagination and imagined beyond them and with them, rather than it being a literal translation of the story.
Also the fact that you placed it in an English country garden.
Exactly, in the present day, but also it's kind of a space which is in the past, and I like to think in the future as well. There's the time period isn't set in the film.
And the location of the Ishtar legend or
yeah,
what is
it's in Mesopotamia in the Middle East, so it's what is present day southern Iraq.
Okay, you are also partly Iraqi,
exactly, which is why it interested me.
Yes, so a lot of things came together for you in that story.
Yeah, it felt like a connection to the past and to a history, and a space and a country that I have some connection to, but also it was important that it was situated in London, because my experience of Iraq and Iraqi history is very much situated within London. I've never been there. I grew up, totally in London, with a lot of family in the UK, Iraqi family, but still a very Western upbringing and experience, and so it wasn't that I was speaking to or for Iraq or something. It was just that it was a connection.
Okay, and the fact that such an old story takes place in Middle East, which we as Europeans sometimes see as an area with that's not so open-minded, mm-hmm. is extra special.
Yeah, and I also think it's really interesting because there's a very colonial history as to why we think that like parts of the global south are a lot that aren't as caught up as us, is what people say. But actually a lot of that is due to like the UK and different European countries colonizing other countries and imposing rules on them. I mean, it's of course not so simplistic as all trans people were accepted before colonialism, but there is definitely like concrete examples of how LGBT rights have been not diminish, but like, for example, in India, like it was homosexuality was made illegal under British rule, and only like I think something like 10 years ago was the law revoked. And there's this whole discourse that, oh, eventually India has made LGBT rights, has given LGBT people rights, but actually, you know, it's it's a complicated, it's like, and also very insidious that we kind of talk about other countries like that when we are the reason.
Yes.
Partially.
Do you read a lot about how other cultures look at gender and sexuality? Is that?
I have tried to a bit. Yeah. And like there's a rich history across the world of gender nonconformity for like the whole of existence. And that's not to say that in all regions it was accepted, and also that's not to say that like it's the case today. So in Iraq, like there's a lot of violence against trans and LGBT people, and so it's not to say that just because there was this historical figure that was trans that everyone has rights now. And so that's something I think I've been thinking about, especially with the film as well, like this idea that we maybe unknowingly exceptionalize transness or this history in Iraq, and actually like people's conditions are actually very violent today. So
okay, the description of the movie on the Queer House.
No. Yeah, Queer House. Yeah.
Which I just read mentions that it's all siblings of color, which is something very important for you, that you work on screen and off screen a lot with people of color.
Yeah, well, the film was also, it was sort of imagining beyond Iraq and other people from the diaspora in London, some friends, some people I met and became part of it through the project and that I found.
Okay, but also off screen, your whole team?
Yeah, the majority of the team, I think except for two runners, were all people of color.
Yeah.
And majority queer as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I think the next thing is to, find trans people to be behind the camera and, in all roles is what I'm interested in.
Is that some kind of activism, the fact that you make that choice, or is it, do you feel like you need to make that rule for yourself, and I want to work with people of color and
yeah, I think it's some sort of working practice to be like I'm gonna seek out these people, and that these people who are underrepresented in an industry are given jobs. And also I think because the work I'm doing is often about trans people, it's quite important that the people who are shooting behind the camera are seeing them through like through their own eyes. I mean, obviously not entirely, but not seeing them in sort of any sort of, fetishized way or anything. They're really looking at them and not putting other judgments onto them or something.
Mm-hmm. Did you study film or
no? Acting? No, I didn't. No.
No. Okay. Okay.
I just did a bit of performing before. Okay,
okay. Did you have experience? Because I also see it a lot as a male-dominated industry,
mm-hmm.
the film industry.
Yep.
So this is a reaction to that.
Yeah, and also to the world, like our social mm-hmm. context in like who gets opportunities
mm-hmm.
also in film and beyond film. And I think it's not like the end is representation, but part of the fight mm-hmm. is representation behind the screen and on screen, but then also a changing of conditions. Along with that,
I guess you get a lot of extremely positive reactions from the community that you do that.
Well, I would, I mean, I think it's also like the people I'm working with and that I surround myself by all think like that intuitively, mm-hmm. you know? Like, you also want to work with people who make you and make your performers feel comfortable mm-hmm. and also who you have fun with, you know?
Yeah.
And who's or who you kind of have. A community with, and that's not to say like all trans people get on or like like that's definitely not the case, but or all queer people, but I definitely find that there's more of a connection to queer people.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay.
And do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's not very articulated very well, but like you're more likely to find your community in spaces that reflect mm-hmm. reflect you, and that's not to say everyone, but
yes. The saying nothing about us without us mm-hmm. is also going through my head uh-huh. now. Like, people are making movies about queer and gender issues, and then the makers do not include other queer or trans people while they're making the documentary about like
there's a whole divide, and I think you also see that in the work often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can see the way a camera looks at someone, I think,
mm-hmm.
like how tenderly or with what care a camera approaches a person. Mm-hmm. And that's, so I think it's very important that you have people who look tenderly and who look with care.
Okay. Do you have like heroes in that, in the filmmaking who do that very well, you think?
Yeah. Trying to
inspirations.
Like I was actually speaking to someone here over lunch. Not this person. I don't think is queer, but doesn't make film about queerness. But a film director called Béla Tarr, who's a Hungarian filmmaker, and he looks at people with such, and also the world, I think, with a slowness and with a care. I'm trying to think. I made a list of queer films that you said. Five.
Yeah.
And also, I think actually all of these directors.
This one you asked me before, should I prepare something?
What should I prepare? And it's the one thing. And I think they do look with, it's actually some good examples. The ones I put were Tongues Untied by Marlon Riggs.
We will put the titles list in the description the of the podcast.
Yeah, and some of these I'm sure you can find online.
Okay.
I put Caravaggio by Derek Jarman, who, these are all queer filmmakers, by mm-hmm. the way. Looking for Langston by Isaac Julian,
which we talked about,
I think we'll rewatch in the next few days.
Yes.
And I think a good example, actually one we, shall we say, I watched and you semi-watched because of the bat infestation the other day, which you can explain to mm-hmm. them, which is Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which I think really tenderly looks through a female gaze and also at the lesbian, at a lesbian experience, but in a very thoughtful way.
And gentle and
with a lot of care.
Yeah. I only saw 20 minutes of the movie because because there was a bat.
Yeah.
You heard while a bat in the movie room. And I was super scared.
And then yesterday we went in to watch another film and there were four bats.
There were four bats.
So we never made the film. You watched a film after, but I was too tired.
On my own.
On your own.
Yeah. I was proud of that.
So nice.
Yes. Okay. Good.
And that's the fifth.
Okay.
A film I watched. Well, I don't have to do it.
Yeah, please.
A film called Funeral Parade of Roses by Toshio Matsumoto, which is like an avant-garde experimental queer film from the 60s.
Okay.
About like a trans femme group in Tokyo.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to admit, besides that 20 minutes part of the Lady on Fire.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen the movies.
Yay. Yeah. Well,
Langston was, Looking for Langston was on my wish list, but so I have some catching up to do. Yeah.
Well, you may have to give me five films at the end.
Yeah. At the end of this podcast?
Well, or the end of this trip, either one.
Yeah. Yeah. Before I go back to Belgium.
Exactly.
I will give you a little list. Cool. What made you decide that film was going to be the medium you would communicate through?
Well, I think it's maybe not the only medium I will communicate through, but one of them. I think I've always loved film and just always, I don't know, it was always like, it was something I could access like at home when I was younger, you know, and I mean, I did have access to other mediums like theatre and galleries. I grew up with that as well, but it was always just something like I could also sit alone and watch, and I found that really exciting. And I think my parents also loved film, and it was like something that was always around. And then when I went to university and really hated what I was studying, I spent a lot of time watching movies I suppose in some ways an escape, but like I think film is partly can be an escape but also could be so much more, you know. Okay. It can open ideas about the world. And
are you a visual person?
Yeah, I mean the films I make are
visual, of course.
But
like when you read or when you think or you, is this?
I'm not sure. Always, we were having this conversation the other day. Someone asked me, "Do you think in images or do you think in words?" Mm-hmm. And I think in words.
Okay.
But I'm very drawn to image. So yes, I love when like this book. I think I was telling you about this book, but called Close to the Knives by David Wojnarowski. Is an autobiography of his life, and he describes like such visceral images of the piers in New York, and light, and just and also like things, surreal images he imagines, and I'm very drawn to that as well.
Okay, so you can film is now your medium, but it can change too.
Yeah, I mean, I started in theatre, performing, and then writing a bit. So I write a little bit, and also along with when I first played Ishtar, which was played at the ICA, I can't remember how long ago, like before lockdown, I did an installation piece with it, which was, a piece of writing, and then followed by this live feast, which was set up, throughout the whole thing as an installation, and then it looked like an installation of, I can show you a photo, one table was like a lot of glass and candelabras, and the other table was like full of food.
Okay.
And then people were invited to feast together.
All right.
And with also a live DJ set, not done by me, done by my cousin Luma Georges, who's a talented DJ. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a very experiential.
Shout out to.
Yeah, shout out to the budding, the young yeah. artists. Yeah. Always shout out. Mm. So I'm really, yeah, I'm interested in like what ways, like an installation, but a way that we can communally be together and like the interactions that happen when strangers eat together. Mm-hmm. And are together in a space.
Okay, cool. You've acted on in theater?
Yeah.
But I also find your IMDb page.
Oh god. And I don't think I've okay.
Yeah, I found one movie.
Yeah, I've done a few short films.
Okay. Maybe it's not
two cool. short films.
Yeah, okay. So I thought maybe you came out of acting and then into got excited about the making itself and
yeah, I mean when it was really cool, I think when I've been on film sets, like I do like acting, mm-hmm. but I was also like on film sets really interested in how everything worked. Yeah. Which is maybe not well, I think it's one way to learn, you know? It's like people come into directing and film in loads of different ways. Like mm-hmm. some people will come by being a runner and observing that way.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in front of a camera, also you're learning and you're seeing how a film works mm-hmm. from a different way, which is interesting, I think.
I'm super interested in the new generation who grow up with all the media in their hands, how they will become the new movie makers.
Yeah, and also how you can make movies on your phone and like mm-hmm. really good quality movies. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen a queer film called Tangerine by Sean Baker, I think it is.
Okay, let's put it into the list.
Well, yeah, bring it in. But that film is shot entirely on iPhone.
Okay.
And it's, I mean, yeah, went to like massive film festivals. It's yeah. played on big cinema screens. But yeah, interesting.
Okay, cool. There's a new project coming up. You already mentioned it about the queer dance places in London from how many years ago?
Well, we're looking, I'm looking like from the 1950s.
Okay, until?
Until present day.
Okay.
Yeah, up until the making of the film.
Cool. And you're researching those, the places where people from the 50s danced.
Yeah.
Or came together.
Came together, exactly. Yeah, and that can be like a traditional dance floor in a club, mm-hmm. or that could be in a garden or in a house or and what we're looking at is also some of those spaces that used to exist that shut down are now other spaces, so a cinema or mm-hmm. A shop, and we'll be filming in those spaces.
Until when was it illegal in the UK?
Until 1967.
We just googled it.
We just did Google to confirm. We weren't far off to the listeners.
So 67.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1967. So all the places before were illegal places.
Were illegal, yeah.
So that's
and obviously once something is legalized, it doesn't mean that society is woohoo is accepting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like those places and those venues were like discriminated against, and then obviously with the AIDS epidemic again there's a lot of discrimination, and up to the present day there's a shit ton of discrimination, and mm-hmm. also maybe like gay men and lesbian women cis and also white people are much more accepted than the trans community or the POC community of queer people.
Yeah, that's the battlefield right now.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like there are things are maybe legalized, but there's still a huge amount of discrimination and violence,
mm-hmm.
Physical violence.
Yeah,
yeah. So just because something, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the you interview those people, you try to find them.
Yeah, find them, and I think the film there won't be any words. Mm-hmm. It will again be dance in this case and music. But I think alongside it, we'll do interviews. And what will be cool is that it will be like people ranging from maybe in their 20s to in their 80s. And what we're interested in is also like the conversation those people will have. So maybe not, it won't just be me interviewing each individual person, but conversations between the cast.
So that will have words?
Yes, but I think it will be something that will sit next to the film. So it won't be in the film.
Like the film is the artistic result and then like the making of or the documentary next to it.
Yeah, and it might not, that might just be like an audio piece.
Okay.
Or something.
Yeah, I would be very interested to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. And I think also I'm interested with the film is like how some of those conversations and communications can come through when these people of different ages just move together. So what comes through, without words.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah.
When will it be finished?
Well, this is...
when should it be finished?
When it should be finished. I think we're thinking of filming in October.
Okay.
So...
Yeah.
Not too long. No. I mean, obviously there's post-production after that, but I think the people who commissioned it and... the producer were all like quite excited about doing something. I mean, mm-hmm. we've all been unable to make work together mm-hmm. Because of lockdown. And I think it'd be nice to come together.
Of course. And from the 50s, so now 2020, some people will be in their 90s.
Ideally, yeah, hopefully.
Gosh.
If we find them and if people want to and I think if they want to basically because also like everyone moves like regardless of like your physical ability like I mean maybe not everyone but a lot of 90-year-olds might not be able to stand up and dance, but mm-hmm. you still move from a chair or a wheelchair or mm-hmm. So hopefully. Yeah.
In the City Theatre of Ghent, I saw, what's the name again? It was based on the lives of several drag men from mm-hmm. different ages. And it was it was some kind of a dance piece. I'm looking for the name. It's a beautiful result. Beautiful.
Oh, you have like, to find it and then...
Yeah.
See if I can watch or read about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, and they toured, I think they toured the whole world with it.
Cool.
Yeah. Was there...
Well, I think there's something interesting, like, it's... in the in queer spaces and in the queer community there aren't often that many spaces for queer people of different ages to interact. Like our clubs have now become like nightclubs which are very young mm-hmm. or some bars but they're not spaces that different people of different ages come together and like there's so much we gain from speaking to each other and mm-hmm. not just I mean obviously in maybe the more traditional sense people talk about knowledge being passed down but I also think it goes both ways you know
mm-hmm.
and there are interesting conversations.
As I told you, I have a bar.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder, and now while you talk about too, how you can stimulate that atmosphere, but it's quite complicated. It's just saying everybody's welcome or every age is welcome.
Doesn't mean people feel like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and to be correct. Not everybody's welcome, of course. But that's if you think not everybody's welcome, you're not welcome. That's a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So not everybody's welcome. That's the whole mindset of it. It sounds a bit weird, maybe, but I have to phrase it better.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not really sure if I'm following.
Yeah, like, if you think, if you say everybody's welcome,
mm-hmm.
I had a whole discussion about that, a good conversation last year during the Queer Pride in Ghent. It's very easy to say we're super open-minded, everybody's welcome. But that also means that the people who discriminate are also welcome.
Well, yeah. I mean,
yeah. So
no, they're not welcome.
They're not welcome.
Yeah. I mean, so, I think everyone is welcome with like some yeah. basic humanity and understanding of.
Yeah. So then the phrase became everybody's welcome unless you think not everybody's welcome.
Okay.
Then you're not welcome. So not everybody's welcome. So
wow,
that was
it gets a bit complex.
The whole paradox, but it made you think, it made yeah. people think like, not everybody's welcome. No, of course not. Not everybody's welcome. No.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will make other people feel super uncomfortable. So
and they should not be in that space.
They should not be in here.
Yeah.
It was about safe space. And so, yeah.
A tangent.
A tangent, I don't know.
Like when something goes off.
Yeah.
A tangent. I think it's okay. Like a mathematical.
Okay, okay.
Maybe.
I'm learning.
Ooh. Learning.
Everyday learning. Let me see, Mia, what I... prepared.
Are you going to perform for us?
This is
maybe.
This is my performance. I have a second page.
Oh.
Yeah. I wanted to know about London.
Yeah.
You grew up in London?
Yes.
You work there. You have your friends and family yeah. there. You found your place in the queer community, or did the queer community grow around you, or was it a natural process, or what can you tell about that?
I would say, oh, the toilet. We wait. Would be a shame for me to be talking about the queer community in London with a toilet
with
flush.
With a toilet soundtrack. I don't think anybody would mind.
So I moved to Amsterdam to study, and then between I was 18 and 21, and I think when I came back is when I really found my community, the queer community.
Have you been to the queer spaces?
Yes.
Have you been to the Trut?
Yes, on okay. what is known as Gay Street to my friends.
Is it?
Isn't it on that street?
No. It's outside. It's a little bit out of the center.
I have. Oh, where's
it's like a basement on Sunday evening.
Oh.
And it's run by.
I've definitely heard of it, but maybe I haven't been.
Oh, it sounds perfect for you.
Okay, well, I'll
go. The first time I was there, there were two 50-year-old women DJing.
Cool.
And it was a naked bartender.
Ooh.
And I entered and I was like,
I'm home.
No, I'm at, I was like, this is not where I come from.
I'm not home.
And you have to switch off your phone when you enter.
Okay.
And the prices of the wine, which I drink, vary throughout the night. Yeah, it was like, didn't I just pay that price? And I felt like, okay, I will not ask about it. It's perfect.
Yeah. That's funny.
So.
Okay, then I don't think I've been there. I've heard of it.
And I think that it's a bit connected to Frankrijk.
Okay.
That's another queer space. But the Gay Street is quite commercial, of course.
Very commercial.
Yeah, quite commercial.
Yeah. quite commercial. Sorry. I didn't mean to be like, no.
Very commercial.
What's it called? What's that street? Yeah, everyone just calls it.
The Warmus, Dwarstraat?
Yes, yes.
Like something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's not there.
Yeah, okay.
I interrupted you. You started
and
when you came back.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. When I came back is when I started to find people through, some friends who I've had since I was younger, and also kind of coming into our queerness together, maybe, mm-hmm. which was not something we spoke about at school. In my case, and then through the queer house, some of my best friends in the world I met through that group and. Or that organization, I feel
how
like
did
that's...
How did you end up at Queer House?
How did I end up at the Queer House? I had read about them or heard about them, and then they did some events. Mm-hmm. I went a few times. First I was in a show with one of the people who run it.
Okay.
And then I think... But maybe I knew about it before then and been to some events. Anyway, I don't know. Been to some of their events and... like the ethos is really special, I think. Well, not maybe special in such like a in this horrible climate that we live in, where like mm-hmm. This organization is run by queer people and trans people, and like everyone who is represented by them is queer and or trans, and yeah, that's very important in an industry where, like, we still have, for example, just before lockdown, a massive theatre in London called the Donmar Warehouse cast a cis man in a trans femme role and trans female role. And that is happening is mm-hmm. like such a, and actually someone who was cast in another role, a trans woman was cast not in the trans female's role but in another role, and then pulled out because she said this was very violent. She was actually represented by the Queer House. Mm-hmm. And so in that climate you need people who represent, who your agent, who understands mm-hmm. and who also protects you to some extent from a very violent industry.
Okay. And you came to them with a plan for Ishtar?
No, they didn't produce Ishtar.
Okay.
So they primarily represent actors.
Okay.
But a lot of those actors make their own work. Actually, yeah. The majority of them. So I would say all of them.
Presenting you as an actor.
Yeah. So yeah, they represent me as an actor. But beyond that, they...
Okay.
Like, they do everything.
And in the Queer House, you met your best friends?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Short and Yaz, who run the Queer House.
Okay.
Are like, yeah.
Yeah. Your go-to friends.
Yeah. And then other people through them. And also who are friends and also are collaborators, mm-hmm. you know? Shara is producing this new film. And it's through... another friend who's commissioned the piece, and they run a queer and trans theatre company in the UK, which is like one of the biggest queer theatre companies in the UK.
Do they tour?
Yeah,
outside
they
UK or also.
I don't know if they've done work outside of the UK.
Ghent is not that far, so
yeah, we should come.
Yeah, it's,
but they're basically working on a piece. A movement piece about queer dance floors, and with that they commission this film to sit next to it.
Okay.
Or in conversation with the live performance.
Cool. All right. Do you call yourself an activist through your work or
no? I think that term is quite charged for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Like the work I do isn't like on the ground work every day, you know? Mm-hmm. But and I'm still learning a lot. But I would say that my work is political. Also, everyone's work is political. Mm-hmm. But I definitely at the core of my work is, I suppose at the core, what I try to be at the core is this idea of. A liberation and a future for a future a different future and a liberation for all people.
Mm-hmm. How optimistic or pessimistic are you about that future?
I think that we have to have hope, and we have to believe mm-hmm. that it will exist, because it's otherwise such a dark place and world mm-hmm. for so many people, and that we have to learn more and fight more, and yeah. And also, yeah, fight and maybe take up arms. And we have to reimagine the world, and really reimagine the world for ourselves. Like, think about a lot. Also, over lockdown, a lot of what I was trying to think about is like thinking about a world without the police, and thinking about the world without prisons, and thinking about the world without like a government or a state, or and a world without borders. Like, really, how can we imagine those things so they come into being?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think other people might call you an activist because when you can go against something, we can also live by example. And I think the way you make your choices and make your movie and make the people you work with, and it's like showing that showing another way of living, another way mm-hmm. of working. And I think that's quite inspiring, and I think it's I would call it a kind of activism. Mm-hmm. It's not the activism that you burn down someone's car, but
which is also very valid and great activism. I think.
But you paint someone, you present them another yeah, car.
I think it's also like, in what way can art be part of that movement? Mm-hmm. And it's something I've been maybe struggling with a bit, I think about a lot, like in what way is maybe art redundant in like in social justice movements, and in what way can it aid and help people imagine a different world?
Mm-hmm.
And
and
also give, and at the same time fight for like the conditions for everyone to be an artist, not just an elite group or a certain group of people.
Yes.
Because we're all artists.
I have one more question mm-hmm. and one suggestion.
Yeah. Are we going to do a karaoke?
No. I wait for the suggestion.
Okay. But,
do you think there's, maybe it's, you maybe just talked about it, but is it someone or some behavior or some thing? What will make the difference the coming years? What can a majority of people hear and then realize, okay, this direction we should go, instead of the fight becomes bigger and bigger, it's a whole anti each other movement for the moment. What can turn that around? Is there like some some goddess from above that can say magical words, and then people will, I think it's sometimes think people don't realize how it is, and how can,
and I think people don't care as well. It's not just not realize. People
mm-hmm.
Are in themselves go through the world with certain privileges, and so are content that other people mm-hmm. suffer because of their privilege.
Yeah.
Because for someone, yeah.
So that's not an optimistic answer. So no, they know, but they don't care. Yeah.
Well, I think that's pop for some people, but I think it's about like centering minoritarian subjects, or like centering Black trans femmes in mm-hmm. our thinking, and also like listening to those people and learning from those people. I feel like I've learned a lot from like the abolitionist movement, or I'm learning.
Can you tell more about
that? Yeah, so just about the way that the police system and the also the prison system, and I also, and then therefore like the judicial system, doesn't protect people or it only protects certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it's very, very violent to a lot of people. And also the state, you know, and I think it's about getting rid of that entirely and imagining other ways mm-hmm. Of being in the world and so quite mm-hmm. radical reimaginings of what the world
yep.
could be, because this isn't what the world has always been as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also acknowledging where those systems originated from. Mm. And they're very, they have a very colonial history.
Yeah, and a lot of people just want to keep it like it is.
Yeah, because it benefits certain people, but it's killing a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And especially black people and trans people,
mm-hmm.
Queer people, refugees, migrants.
Yeah.
It's very, very violent. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that means we're in the world, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. we yeah. ended up here and that means that we, have to we have to work mm-hmm. together to change this world, because it's not,
mm-hmm.
it's not okay as it is.
Yeah. By pointing out, by living by example, by representation, by a whole list of
and in ways like not engaging with the police. Mm-hmm. You know, if you see a fight, what ways, or if your home is broken into, like what are other ways that we can imagine mm-hmm. that we can live without engaging with these institutions?
Mm.
That we also protect other people. Like, how can we redistribute our wealth and pay reparations from our salaries, and like not just do that once, like a lot of people have done over this period, donating to like the Minnesota Fund or donating in one-offs, but how, like, do we set up a plan that for the rest of our lives we redistribute wealth, because the state isn't doing that. To the extent it should be, and definitely not reparations around colonialism. Might mm-hmm. be doing that.
Yeah, Belgium is also on the, it's also a very big discussion going on about our colonial past now. So.
Mm-hmm. And also how do we,
And how it still lives on in so many things, and how apparently a lot of people don't see any problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So beyond the statues and
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was very nice talking to you, Mia.
Thank you for having me.
It strikes me that you have you put a lot of thought on a lot of things that you you're not just talking. You think you had a lot of talks with people, and you read a lot, and you thought things through. And
never enough. Feel that I've read or engaged enough, but I feel
and it's also interesting to see that the result of your work is more the artistic, poetic thing, but behind it all it's so much well thought and documented. And yeah.
And cool. I think I'm also thinking about that in like setting up a working practice, like we were talking about, for example, representation behind the screen and on screen. And so you have some like very real conditions that you make sure you follow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. My suggestion to...
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking to end with a very positive note, but... Shall we talk a few minutes about Divine?
Yes. Who I very recently have discovered, we say?
Yeah. But then
who will play a role, or
yeah, might.
Her,
yeah.
her inspired by her backup dancers.
So Divine
will play a role in the film.
Divine is a famous drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
She comes from America. I thought she was from London, but she's American. She died at the end of the 80s and she had a few disco hits.
Yeah.
And then she had a few bizarre moments in one movie you've also seen.
Yeah, in Pink Flamingos by John Waters.
And
I feel like the scene is so famous, we can maybe say it on
yeah.
out loud or not.
Yeah.
Leave it to the viewers. The listeners.
What have you seen doing her?
She eats dog shit live on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think that was the moment when people were a bit like...
But she was in a lot of other films by John Waters, I think, and yeah, after that as well.
But that moment is very famous.
Yeah.
Like.
Also in the book I'm reading now, came up. They watch Pink Flamingos. The book I was telling
She's
you about.
She's everywhere.
She is everywhere.
And I made a cover version of her song.
Maybe we can play it at the end.
I think you're a man. I will play it at the end as
yes.
the outro. So I don't know if we should just mentioning Divine was, I thought, a good ending.
Yeah, definitely.
So she connects us now a little bit because I showed you the clip.
Yeah.
And then you said, I love those dancers.
I love them. And then I sent it to my family group. And then my dad said that he reviewed a Divine show
because
he was
reporter,
a music, as yeah. a reporter. Yeah.
It's
all connected.
And now maybe in your next projects about queer places, the dance scene might be inspired by...
It will be. There will be a choreographed scene inspired by those dancers. I've become obsessed.
It's fantastic. I think you should track them down, but of course they're not from London, but
for another project maybe.
Yeah. Just have
yeah, a what's the do you remember what channel it's on? It's basically the live performance if everyone wants to watch it.
Yeah, it's live playback performance like it was in those days, and she enters the club with
in a Cadillac or something.
Yeah, in a Cadillac, yes. Yeah. And then she goes on stage and there are some dancers doing their moves. It's fantastic.
It is.
It's queer culture. It's gay culture. Maybe it's mm-hmm. it's yeah. Yeah.
But part of queer culture, a big part of queer yeah. culture.
Yeah. May she rest in peace.
Yeah.
She's with us.
I think she was quite political.
Yeah, she became. Yeah. In the beginning she was just a more disco princess, but then she was outspoken, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also her, I Googled if she was American or British, and her mother, after she died, was a bit involved with the LGBTQ community. So
cool.
She did some work there, I think, in honoring her child.
Mm.
Mia, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Famous last words.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You think you're a man, but you're only a boy. You think you're a man, you are only a toy. You think you're a man, but you just couldn't see. You were a man enough, though, to satisfy. You think you're a man, but you're only a boy. You think you're a man, you are only a toy. You think you're a man, but you just couldn't see. You were a man enough, though, to satisfy me.